Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So continuing on with Four Foundations of Mindfulness and Anapanasati, reading from the book Right Mindfulness by Tanajin Jeff, Tanisaro Bhikkhu. So Lungpa read the Anapanasati Sutta, the last teaching session we had, and now we're heading into chapter 6, the structure of breath meditation. And a couple things in here might get read a couple of times because Lungpa has highlighted a couple of things which are really excellent and crucial meditation instructions which tend to get forgotten or not emphasized so much. The central focus of Majjhima Nikaya 118 is the description of the 16 steps in mindfulness of breathing. These steps are the most precise meditation instructions in the discourses, and they appear at many spots throughout the canon. Listed in the origin story to the third rule in the monastic code, Parajika 3, they are the only meditation instructions given in the Vinaya, the section of the canon devoted to the monastic discipline. This shows that they were considered indispensable guidance for those monks who might memorize only the Vinaya in the course of their monastic career. And I thought I might just read part of that origin story to Parajika 3, just to highlight where it might be possible to go wrong in body contemplation or imbalanced. So all of the monastic rules, all of the 227 rules have an origin story, and this is the origin story to the third rule of defeat, Parajika, the rule against killing a human being. If a monk kills a human being, then they're defeated and no longer communion, meaning they have to disrobe and cannot ordain again in this lifetime. So this is a story connected with that rule. At one time, the Enlightened One, the Lord, was staying at Vaisali in the pavilion of the gabled hall in the great wood. At that time, the Lord talked in many ways to the monks on the subject of the impure. He spoke in praise of the impure. He spoke in praise of developing contemplation of the impure. And this is an antiquated translation of body contemplation. Asubha. The unbeautiful aspects of the body, translated here as impure. Abhihorga, yeah. He spoke thus and thus in praise of taking the impure as a stage in meditation. Then the Lord addressed the monks thus, "I wish monks to go into solitary retreat for a half month. I do not wish anyone to come up to me except the one who brings my alms food." "Very well, Lord," the monks answered. And accordingly, no one went up to the Lord except the one who took him alms food. Then the monks said, "The Lord has talked in many ways on the subject of the impure. He spoke in praise of the impure. He spoke in praise of developing contemplation of the impure. He spoke in praise of taking the impure as a stage in meditation." These monks dwelt intent upon practicing contemplation of the impure in many different aspects, but they were troubled by their own bodies, ashamed of them, loathing them. It is as if a woman or a man, when young and of tender years and fond of ornaments, having washed their head, should be troubled, ashamed, full of loathing because of the carcass of a snake or of a dog or of a man hanging around the neck. Even so, those monks who were troubled by their own bodies, ashamed of them and loathing them, both by themselves, deprived themselves of life, and also deprived one another of life. Having come up to Migha Landika, a sham recluse, they said, Be so good, your reverence, as to deprive us of life. This bowl and robe will become yours. Then Migalandika, the sham recluse, a hireling for a bowl and robe, deprived the company of monks of life, and taking a bloodstained knife, came up to the banks of the river Vagumuda. Then, while Migalandika, the sham recluse, was washing the large bloodstained knife, he became remorseful, he became repentant. That is bad for me, that is not good for me, that was wrongly gotten by me, that was not rightly gotten by me. Indeed, much demerit attaches to me because I deprived of life monks who were virtuous and of good conduct. Then a certain devata of the retinue of Mara, coming on unbroken water, said to Migalandika, the sham recluse, "It is good, it is good. It is good for you, rightly gotten by you. Much merit attaches to you because you bring across those who had not crossed." Then Migalandika, the sham recluse, said, "It is said that it's good for me. It's said it's rightly gotten for me, and much merit attaches to me. It is said I bring those across who had not crossed." And taking a sharp knife and going from vihara to vihara, from cell to cell, he said, "Who has not crossed? Whom do I bring across?" Then those monks who were not devoid of passion were frightened at that time, in a state of consternation, their hair standing on end. But those monks, this is not a great translation, it's the meaning is those monks who were sort of fearless and courageous, not frightened at that time, nor were they in a state of consternation, nor did their hair stand on end. They allowed Migalandika to deprive them of life. Now the Lord, at the end of the half month, arising from his retreat, addressed the Venerable Ananda. "Ananda, how is it that the company of monks is so diminished as it is?" "It is because, Lord, the Lord talked to the monks in many ways on the subject of the impure. He spoke in praise of the impure. He spoke in praise of contemplating the impure," and so on in the story of Migalandika taking the lives of the monks. Then Ananda called together in the assembly hall as many monks as dwell near Vaisali. "Very well, Lord," said Ananda. Then the Lord came up to the assembly hall, and having come up, he sat on the appointed seat. Sitting down, the Lord addressed the monks, saying, "This, monks, is mindfulness of breathing. I will teach you mindfulness of breathing." It's the origin of teaching the Anapanasati Sutta. In the discourses, the 16 steps appear in many contexts. In Majjhima Nikaya 62, the Maharahulavada Sutta, which was read previously, in Majjhima Nikaya 62, for instance, lists them after a long set of other preparatory meditation exercises, contemplating the properties of earth, water, fire, wind, and space as not self, so as to develop dispassion for them, developing an attitude of imperturbability modeled on the imperturbability of earth, water, fire, and wind, so as not to be disturbed by pleasant or unpleasant sensations, developing the sublime attitudes of goodwill, compassion, empathetic joy, and equanimity to abandon ill will, harmfulness, resentment, and aversion, contemplating the unattractiveness of the body to overcome lust, and developing the perception of inconstancy to overcome the conceit "I am." These preparatory exercises equip the mind with tools for dealing with any unskillful thoughts that might come up in the course of breath meditation. In particular, they're useful skills for gladdening, steadying, and releasing the mind, trainings described in steps 10, 11, and 12 of the 16, a point to which we will return in the next chapter. Anguttara 10, Chapter 10, Sutta 60, the Giriyamananda Sutta, lists the 16 steps as the last of 10 perceptions, preceded by the perception of inconstancy, the perception of not-self, the perception of unattractiveness, the perception of drawbacks, the perception of abandoning, the perception of dispassion, the perception of cessation, the perception of distaste for every world, and the perception of the undesirability of all fabrications. Again, these 9 perceptions are useful tools in steps 10, 11, and 12 of breath meditation, and we will consider them further in the next chapter as well. The fact that the 16 steps are classed as a, quote, perception, sanya, here shows that the term perception is not limited to memory of the past and reflects the fact that the 16 steps are related to the practice of concentration, inasmuch as the levels of jhana up through the dimension of nothingness are termed, quote, perception attainments, unquote. And there's a sutta to illustrate this. It's Anguttara, Book of the Nine, Sutta 36. I'll read that. Bhikkhus, I say that the destruction of the taints occurs in dependence on the first jhana. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the second jhana. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the third jhana. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the fourth jhana. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the base of the infinity of space. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the base of the infinity of consciousness. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the base of nothingness. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the base of neither perception nor non-perception. I say that the destruction of the taints also occurs in dependence on the cessation of perception and feeling. The Samyutta Nikaya devotes an entire Samyutta, or chapter, to breath meditation. In 8 of its discourses, the 16 steps are simply listed, sometimes with the rewards that come from practicing them all the way to total release, but without relating them to other meditative practices. Other discourses in this Samyutta, however, do mention some of the meditative practices that can accompany the 16 steps. Samyutta Nikaya 54, Sutta 2, lists the 16 steps in conjunction with the 7 factors of awakening. Samyutta Nikaya 54, Sutta 8, states that they lead to all 9 of the concentration attainments. Samyutta Nikaya 54.10 begins with the 16 steps and relates them to the 4 establishings of mindfulness, and 4 discourses, Samyutta Nikaya 54, Suttas 13-16, relate the 16 steps through the 4 establishings to the 7 factors for awakening and through them to clear knowing and release. This last depiction shows that breath meditation is not just a preliminary practice. It can lead all the way to the goal of the path. And I'm going to read one of those suttas, which I thought was interesting. Samyutta Nikaya 54, Sutta 8. It's called the Simile of the Lamp. Bhikkhus, concentration by mindfulness of breathing, when developed and cultivated, is of great fruit and benefit. And how, bhikkhus, is concentration by mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated so that it is great fruit and benefit? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu having gone to the forest, to the foot of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, straightened his body, and set up mindfulness in front of him, just mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. He trains thus, and this goes through all of the 16 steps. It just has ellipses here, but it goes through all 16 steps of Anapanasati, ending with, he trains thus, contemplating relinquishment, I will breathe in. He trains thus, contemplating relinquishment, I will breathe out. It is this way, bhikkhus, that concentration by mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated so that it is of great fruit and benefit. I too, bhikkhus, before my enlightenment, while I was still a bodhisatta, not yet fully enlightened, generally dwelt in this dwelling. While I was generally dwelling in this dwelling, neither my body nor my eyes became fatigued, and my mind, by not clinging, was liberated from the taints. Therefore, bhikkhus, if a bhikkhu wishes, may neither my body nor my eyes become fatigued, and may my mind, by not clinging, be liberated from the taints. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to. Therefore, bhikkhus, if a bhikkhu wishes, may the memories and intentions connected with the household life be abandoned by me. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to. Therefore, bhikkhus, if a bhikkhu wishes, may I dwell perceiving the repulsive and the unrepulsive. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to. If a bhikkhu wishes, may I dwell perceiving the unrepulsive and the repulsive. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to.
That's also asubha.
Perceiving the unrepulsive in the repulsive.
Well, again, subha asubha.
Subha asubha.
Another sort of translation.
So it's another, yeah, unrepulsive being subha and repulsive being asubha in this. If a bhikkhu wishes, may I dwell perceiving the repulsive in the unrepulsive and the repulsive. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to. If a bhikkhu wishes, may I dwell perceiving the unrepulsive in the repulsive and the unrepulsive. This same concentration by mindfulness of breathing should be closely attended to. And so on. There's a lot of a lot more lists like that, but the reason I read that more is I liked the imagery of the body and eyes not being tired. Any questions? It's pretty.
So the eyes not being tired is because it seems that at that time, Kasina meditation was a major component of the some of the practices. So the, certainly in Indian tradition, that kasina meditations, which you take and use a visual object, and certainly in the commentaries, and that's actually the main emphasis of meditation that Acharya Buddhaghosa gives, and even that's why there's a complication in even when he explains Anapanasati, then he tries to squeeze Anapanasati into kasina meditation. That makes it a bit clunky.
So the eyes not being tired and the benefit of being able to do kasina meditation more effectively.
No, it's just that by doing a lot of kasina meditation, then your eyes get tired.
Right, okay.
It's offered this as an alternative.
Yeah.
As an alternative to kasina meditation.
Yeah, because you actually spend a lot of time with your, like, taking either a color or earth or water, and you have your eyes open and keep staring until you start. Images from reflexive images.
Is there any other questions? This is pretty dense beginning of the chapter here.
This last sutta that you read also illustrates the balance necessary in terms of the sutta practice.
Yeah, it has it's kind of a sort of a hard to understand when you just read it quickly like that, like seeing the repulsive and the unrepulsive and the repulsive. But I know Ajahn Mahabua has talked about that practice before, as far as playing with perception and training yourself to perceive things you perceived in one way to try to perceive them in a different way. Go on. It can lead all the way to the goal of the path. As we have already noted, this is the structure of the way breath meditation is depicted in Majjhima Nikaya 118, and it's important to note at the outset that this structure covers all three aspects of right view that right mindfulness must keep in mind. It provides a framework for understanding the practice of breath meditation. It provides, in the 16 steps, instructions in the duties that follow from that framework. and it provides motivation for following the framework. In fact, the discussion of how the 16 steps completes the practice of the establishings of mindfulness and the 7 factors for awakening, culminating in clear knowing and release, is, in and of itself, an explanation of the motivation for practicing those steps. This fact is indicated by the statement introducing the structure of the discourse. Mindfulness of in and out breathing, when developed and pursued, is of great fruit, of great benefit. The remainder of the discourse can be read as an explanation of what those fruits and benefits are, and why they are enough to make you want to master the 16 steps as skills. The structure of Majjhima Nikaya 118 also provides an implicit answer to one of the primary questions concerning the practical application of the 16 steps, the question of the order in which they should be practiced. The discourses that give the steps simply as a list, without relating them to the 4 establishings of mindfulness, seem to suggest that they should be practiced consecutively from 1 to 16. However, if you refer to where the steps are set out and read them carefully, you will notice that they don't follow a clear linear sequence. The steps in the 3rd tetrad appear especially out of sequence. Step 10, for instance, gladdening the mind, would appear to cover the same ground as steps 5 and 6, breathing in and out sensitive to rapture and pleasure. Step 11, steadying the mind, would appear to be presupposed at the very least by steps 4 through 8, which deal with calming bodily and mental formation. Step 12, releasing the mind, would appear on the surface to be the goal of all the steps that follow in the last tetrad. The best way to resolve this question is to look at the 16 steps in the context provided by Majjhima Nikaya 118, for even though the discourse does not give an explicit answer to the question, its structure does provide an implicit one. Majjhima 118 states that each of the tetrads corresponds to one of the establishings of mindfulness. It explains the correspondence between the tetrads and the establishings with these statements. The first tetrad: I tell you, monks, that this, the in and out breath, is classed as a body among bodies. The second tetrad: I tell you, monks, that this, careful attention to in and out breaths, is classified as a feeling among feelings. The third tetrad: I don't say that there is mindfulness of in and out breathing in one of lapsed mindfulness and no alertness. The fourth tetrad: he who sees with discernment the abandoning of greed and distress is one who watches carefully with equanimity. At first glance, these explanations seem to raise more questions than they answer. To begin with, none of them makes specific reference to any of the steps in the 4 tetrads. Instead of citing the obvious references to body, feeling, and mind in the first 3 tetrads, the first 3 explanations give reasons that could apply to any stage in any form of breath mindfulness. The fourth explanation is even more generic and could apply to any form of meditation in which greed and distress are abandoned. In addition, the second explanation is especially counterintuitive in that it cites attention, which is normally classed under the aggregate of fabrication, as a feeling. And now I'll end with this last paragraph, which is kind of the linchpin of what he's trying to get at here. However, instead of seeing the generic quality of these explanations as a problem, we can understand it as providing an important insight. In the first 3 explanations, the object of meditation, the breath, is the same. This means, in practice, that keeping track of feelings and mind states in and of themselves does not mean abandoning the breath for another meditation object. After all, feelings and mind states are present in the sheer act of remaining focused on the breath. When you shift your frame of reference from body to feelings or mind, you simply become more alert to a different aspect or dimension of what you're already doing. In fact, it's hard to imagine that any ability to stick successfully with the breath would not require developing sensitivity to the feelings and mind states involved in maintaining and sustained attention. Majjhima 118 simply offers you the choice of focusing your interest on whatever aspect seems most fruitful at any particular time. So it's the point being not abandoning the breath for piti or sukha or any of the other states arising, but that the breath is kept. The breath is kept in mind throughout all of the steps. So I think I'll end it there for now. If there's any questions.
Nam yam tam kathaya sadhu karam dadamase.